Il-program li ser tisimaw uwa miġjub lilkom bixewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
This is Patricia Camilleri, welcoming you to University Matters on Campus FM. In this series, together, we shall continue to discover more about the work of the university's academics and about the many activities that will be taking place on campus over the next year. I'm very pleased to have with me today in the studio for University Matters on Campus FM, Professor Godfrey Baldacchino. Professor Baldacchino is not new to University Matters and is probably very well known to our listeners. However, I always like to give a brief outline of my guests' academic experience, as this helps to put them in a well-rounded context. So, just a few words about my guest. Since 2013, Professor Baldacchino has been Professor of Sociology at the University of Malta and Chairman of its Board for the Centre of Labour Studies. He's also Island Studies Teaching Fellow at the University of Prince Edward Island in Canada and Visiting Professor of Island Tourism at the Università di Corsica Pascal Paoli in Corsica, France. Since 2001, he has authored and co-authored 20 books or monographs and co-edited another 23. I'll mention just the first two that are on the list. His most recent publications, Island Enclaves, Offshoring Strategies, Creative Governance and Sub-National Island Jurisdictions, and the other, Island Futures, Conservation and Development Across the Asia Pacific. His edited 640-page book of The World of Islands is the Island Studies Primer Textbook, and he has served as a guest, single or lead editor on thematic issues of numerous scholarly journals and written over 100 book chapters and journal articles. I could continue, but I would like to leave lots of space for the subject of today's interview, which is his new publication, Archipelago Tourism. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Patricia.
Professor Baldacchino.
My pleasure.
Well, island studies, with its various facets of economics, tourism, sociology, history, is, as we've heard in your bio, your area of expertise. But in this new publication, you've added perhaps another dimension to the discussion, that is archipelago tourism. So perhaps we had better start off with a definition of archipelago. What are the attributes, shall we say, of an archipelago?
Good question. Better to start from first principles. And of course, even a more basic question than that is, what is an island? Piece of land surrounded by water. And in our case, since we're talking about tourism, obviously it has to be inhabited, or it has to be at least visited by people. The study of islands takes many forms. And as you said, there are many disciplinary perspectives that one can take to the study of islands. And the study of island tourism in itself is a fairly rich area of scholarship. However, when we come to islands unto themselves, we often discriminate between three different categories of how to look at islands. The first is the island unto itself. So just the island, irrespective of its context, irrespective of its milieu, that is usually what is emphasized when we talk about island culture, when we talk about island genealogies, how far back people can trace their lineage to the island where they live and where they have been bred. The second dimension is an island mainland one. So when we talk about history, when we talk about conflicts, when we talk about migration in and out, it's usually, of course, it's the link between the island and somewhere else. Usually it's nearest mainland or its colonial power. You must remember that many of these islands have spent time living as colonies of another power. However, there is actually a third dimension, and when you think about it, it makes a lot of sense, because usually when we do refer to islands, we don't really mean islands, we mean archipelagos. And that's part of the tyranny of discourse, I think, that individuals generally, they very kind of slipshoddily conflate the island to mean more than it is, or the other way around, they deflate the archipelago to mean less than it is. A very good example of this is our own Malta. What is Malta?
That's a good question.
Sounds like a stupid question, but actually it's quite profound. When we say Malta, we may imply the country. But actually, the country is not just one island. It's a group of islands, some of which are inhabited, of course, Malta and Gozo and so far Comino, and others are not, Filfla, Kemunet, Selmun Rock, etc. So when we say Malta, we have to be very careful because it is both the name of the country, but at the same time, it's also the name of the largest island in that country. And when the name of the largest island assumes the name of the country, as happens with many archipelagos, by the way, then perhaps there is a little disservice being made to the rest of the team. And I'm sure we'll be elaborating on that in due course.
The archipelagos that are highlighted in the book are certainly various and widespread around the world, from the Maldives to the Faroes, perhaps. So these archipelagos, as you're saying, they differ to their island brothers or islands that are closely linked to their mainlands. But also, you've made that very interesting point, I think, about an island might have a link to the mainland, but then it might definitely have a link to a mainland, which is really very far away.
That's a very good point. In fact, one of the characteristics of very small or small islands is that they don't have a local hinterland. Their natural resource base is extremely limited. Their frontier, if you may want to call it that, their place of refuge is inexistent in their own country. They have to seek it somewhere else. And of course, Malta, being where it is and what it is, and being the size it is, it has always, I think, had, certainly for the past 200 years or so, a fairly complex relationship with its hinterlands, be they North Africa, be they Southern Europe, particularly Italy, of course, and Sicily, as well as Great Britain, the United Kingdom, for reasons that I think are obvious to our listeners. Many other countries exhibit the same thing. In fact, very often we refer to islands as having a kind of an in-between status. They are in between. They hover. And because they hover, they can sometimes exploit the advantages of being on one side or on the other side according to the opportunities that present themselves. Right now, for example, in spite of Malta's relatively successful economic development, we are hovering between a fairly dysfunctional island, Sicily, and a fairly dysfunctional state, Libya, which doesn't bode well, for example, for, say, companies like Air Malta, right? Companies that also include tourism companies, etc., trading organizations and agencies. So this in-betweenity, we call it in the literature, this in-betweenity is one of the characteristics of many archipelagos. And, of course, within themselves, then, even these archipelagos have their own jockeying and positioning that takes place very much. Places like, for example, the Azores that feature in this book. The Azores is very interesting because it is a multi-island jurisdiction. It's part of Portugal.
Just tell us exactly where the Azores are.
Yeah, well, the Azores are located in the North Atlantic. As you go west towards the North America, it's about one-third of the way across the Atlantic pond. Mainly, I think there are seven islands there, but there are two relatively large islands within the group. There's São Miguel, where Ponta Delgada is located. I think it's the capital city. But then there's Terceira, where Angra do Heroísmo, the city of Angra do Heroísmo, is located. And Angra do Heroísmo is a World Heritage Site, by the way. So the islanders, if you ask people from São Miguel, they will tell you, of course, we're the most important island, right? We're the capital, etc. But if you go to Terceira, they will tell you we're the more historic island. And actually, in the past, they were the capital city of the Azores. So you get these tensions, you get these rivalries, which add a lot of spice to local life. And one of the arguments I'm making in this book, along with my contributors, is that the people who try to package these islands for touristic purposes, they very often don't go into this kind of color. They prefer presenting a relatively plastic, staid,
bland
representation of the archipelago. Sometimes it's a contrived complementarity. They come up with all these strange ideas which make you think, wow, I have to visit all these islands to get a sense of the archipelago. And guess what? That's exactly the intention of the marketer. Because they're trying to develop a sense of multi-island tourism in order to leave some money in each of the different destinations. But from a social and anthropological point of view, it doesn't make much sense because this representation doesn't jive with the actual way of life, the actual tensions, the actual little petty politics that exist between these islands.
But perhaps it would serve to overcome those petty rivalries and actually make people go and visit those parts of the islands which perhaps the people in the main area aren't really interested in themselves?
Possibly. That stands to be checked and researched, of course. Let me put my academic hat on here. However, tourists who are also interviewed, tourists who have experienced this, find that their experience is somewhat artificial because they are made to believe that they're going to find something. For example, you go to the Bahamas. Bahamas is a group of many islands, hundreds of islands, many of which are inhabited. They're called the Family Islands. It's a very nice name. And looking at the marketing of this archipelago, they have done some excellent branding initiatives recently. You get a sense that all these different islands are really different, really different. They are diverse. So you really, for you to get a proper taste of the Bahamas, you have to go to Abaco, you have to go to Cat Island, you have to go to San Salvador, New Providence, etc., etc., right? But actually, when you visit then, you find it's basically most of, you know, it's more of the same. It's sun, sand, and sea, gated communities very often, same type of economic resources, natural resources. So there is a disconnect, I think. And you may fool a tourist once, but you don't fool him or her more than once.
Yes, and the word gets around on TripAdvisor.
Absolutely.
There's no getting away from it now. I was looking at the presentation you've given recently of your book, and you mentioned these five themes in archipelago mm-hmm. tourism. Perhaps we could go through them, and you could briefly yes. describe with a few practical examples, as you've been doing, what they mean. One of them is in or visibility, invisibility yes. or visibility.
So that is the point of departure, I think, because you cannot talk about branding, marketing, or logistics of an island unless it is first of all visible. It has to be known. Most of the effort that goes into branding a product and marketing a product must first go into making people know that the product exists. Because how else will these people decide to buy the product or the service unless they first know that it's available? Right? So part of the intent behind an archipelago tourism initiative would be, probably, plausibly, to put different islands on the potential map of a visitor. And here already we run into problems, because how do you market a destination that is archipelagic? What do you put on the main page of your homepage? Do you put just the name of the country? Do you put just the name of the big island? Do you try to put the name of all the islands that exist? And there may be, as I said, dozens of them. Do you prioritize them? And of course, different countries come up with different models. In our case, the latest exercise by the Malta Tourism Authority, for example, is actually to highlight Malta, but then underneath Malta, there are the names of the three populated islands, Malta, Gozo, Comino. In the Gozo office of the Malta Tourism Authority, Gozo is privileged. So it's still Malta at the top. Yes, I think it's still Malta at the top, but then the word Gozo is put up front in the next sequence to show, to highlight that, you know, it also has its own identity.
But the website, I think, as you have pointed out somewhere, I read in one of the documents, is www.visitmalta.com.
Exactly. Even you read the Air Malta in-flight magazine, for example. I was on an Air Malta flight yesterday. And there is a page which tells you, I think, 20 things to do and see in Malta. Well, some of those things are in Gozo, right? But again, you know, it's Malta that's at the top of the page. And, of course, the Gozdens are not very amused by all this, of course.
Another theme is tweaked representation.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
So once you are visible, then how are you made visible? Assuming that you've gone over the first hurdle and you've made it, you are now, you have an identity, you exist. Then the next question is how, however, this existence manifests itself? How and who is responsible for this identification? And this is where, again, a lot of work goes into marketing agencies. Who runs these agencies? On whose behalf are they doing their work? How well do they represent the interests, perhaps, of the islanders themselves in wanting to be represented in a certain way? And, of course, there's no discussion where islands are uninhabited, because there are no locals, but where islands are inhabited, one should properly presume that the people who live on those islands have their own way in which they either think that they should be represented or the way that they think that their own tourism industry should develop, and therefore the representation should be in line with their particular views of how the industry should develop. This is especially the case in those islands where the tourist market is fairly segmented, meaning that the type of tourist and the type of tourism offered in one island is definitely different from the one offered in the second island. Even in the case of the Maltese Islands, for example, Gozo has very much become, and has been for many years, of course, a day trip destination. but also a villa, bungalow type, weekend fun type of destination, right? Very, very different from Malta. There are many more hotels and apart hotels in Malta than there are in Gozo on a per capita basis. So how does this differentiation come across in the way that islands are represented? That is the question.
And also in Malta, you also have the sunsea destination side, and then the cultural, historical, archaeological, increasingly marine archaeological side, which also needs to be represented. And how do you do that? The battle between bums on seats, which is an awful expression, but, you know, getting people here and then bringing them here to enjoy other things.
Yes.
So how do you get that message across?
As I said, it's difficult. Gozo has started to get its act together pretty well, I think. It now also has a reputation, for example, as a scuba diving paradise, one of the best sites in the world, apparently, for scuba diving, not just in the Mediterranean. Malta, of course, is better placed, better privileged in terms of history, culture, activities, even the very fact that it's a much more metropolitan place means that there are many more things going on, kind of thing. Whereas Gozo is more laid back, more rural, therefore it's more nature than culture.
Part of
in
its
that
charm.
Respect. Exactly. So yes, I think it's happening fairly well in our own archipelago. Looking at how other archipelagos are doing this, of course, I think is very instructive.
And the next one, domination, subordination, what exactly do you mean by that?
Yes. So we've become visible, we've discussed how we are represented. However, how does this representation put us in relation to the other islands in the group? In the case of Malta and Gozo, I think it's fairly obvious Malta is the dominant partner. It's the dominant player in the coalition. In other countries, especially in places where there's more than two islands, the definition of an archipelago ranges from two islands to thousands. So if you have a place like Indonesia, Indonesia has over 7,000 islands. Okay, it's the world's largest archipelagic state. How do you market those islands? It's practically an impossible task, right? So, yes, invariably, in this case, by default, you come up with a hierarchy whereby some islands are more privileged than others.
And what about those places where there are lots of islands, but then they're not all sovereign, that they're mixed up together? I mean, the Caribbean, although it's huge,
yes,
but has that sort
That's
of idea?
That's a very good point, Patricia. In fact, the Caribbean is considered to be one of the world's largest archipelagos. It's also the world top tourism playground. It still is. It has a very good reputation as a region. People go to the Caribbean. But then within the Caribbean, there's an enormous competition. Where exactly are you going to the Caribbean? Are you going to the Bahamas? Are you going to the Dominican Republic? Are you going to Bermuda? Are you going to Barbados? St. Lucia, Grenada, St. Vincent, Antigua, Barbuda, Martinique, Guadeloupe? You know, it goes on. Tobago, Trinidad. It doesn't stop. All these are islands. Some of them are sovereign states. Some of them are members of a sovereign state. Tobago is part of Trinidad and Tobago. Other places are members of other countries. If you go to Aruba, Aruba is a country within the Kingdom of the Netherlands. If you go to Guadeloupe or Saint-Barthélemy, they are parts of France. They're members of the European Union. If you go to Montserrat, it's still part of the United Kingdom. It's an overseas territory. So these places have their own layering to feature, right? They have to figure out, how is it that somebody is going to be convinced to go to Tobago if Tobago is not a country unto itself? Of course, there are ways and means to resolve this tension. In many situations, these smaller islands will have their own tourism agencies or their own branch agencies, which are, of course, part of the national agency. The national agency will be a little bit concerned with this, of course, because they're trying to bring product, they're trying to bring tourists over. So their main motivation is to bring them over. Now, whether they end up having their meal in Port of Spain or in Scarborough, Port of Spain being the capital of Trinidad, Scarborough being the capital of Tobago, it may not be such a big deal. But for Tobago, of course, it is a very big deal, especially if the international airport is on the main island. That's something else. So visibility, domination, subordination sometimes can also be seen in a logistical sense. If people are flying in from long distances, you need an international airport. It's very expensive to have an international airport on each and every island. So, of course, people come to the main island. And guess what? When they land in one island, 80%, 85% of them tend to stay in that island, to the disappointment of the rest.
So that becomes a domination, automatic.
Exactly,
almost,
by default.
Especially if they are short-term tourists. So I suppose you've mentioned the layering of the situation.
Yes, but let me expand a little bit on that. Because even then, by layering and liminality, what I mean is that even if you look at Gozo, Gozo has its own archipelago. Gozo has its own rocks. Fungus rock and other rocks in the vicinity. Of course, even Comino is considered to be part of the Gozo region. So for a place like Comino to figure out its own tourism mission or vocation, it has to struggle against not just the identity of Malta, but also against the identity of Gozo, right? And possibly somehow that identity then filters through and connects with the tourists.
The last theme that you mentioned, nature and expression of differentiation.
These archipelagos tend to occupy similar climatic zones. Very often they also have similar biogeographical features, which means that their natural qualities tend to be fairly similar. However, the task of branding, the task of marketing, is not to highlight similarities, it's to highlight differences, and indeed, preferably to highlight complementarities. So in this game, it's not just the culture of the people that is objectified and socially constructed, but sometimes even nature itself is socially constructed. And the image that is presented, as we said earlier, it tends to be bland, tends to be artificial, but well, tourists don't know better until they actually visit, is one of the rainbow. There's a very common reference to a complementarity that's reflected in the wonderful colors of the rainbow. And guess what? Each of the different islands has its own color.
Sometimes countries, there's one country which has its logo now with each letter is a different color, I suppose.
Oh, yes. That's what pretty common these days.
Wanted to express.
Part of the exercise of this book, and it is a very visual area of research, as you can imagine, there will be actually a full color insert in this book showing how places like the Bahamas, the Philippines, Indonesia, the Channel Islands, how do they manifest their diversity when it comes to branding their tourism product? And of course, color is extremely important. You cannot imagine, Patricia, the rigor, the care with which these countries grant you permission to reproduce their logo. You have to reproduce it in exactly the same shades of color because they have invested a lot of money, a lot of energy in coming up with that representation of themselves. And of course, they don't want that to be messed around.
We mentioned inter-island rivalry. And I suppose Malta and Gozo obviously comes to mind, but there must be other examples as well.
In fact, all the islands that you look at, when you look at them as archipelagos and you look closely at them, you will realize that the harmony, the complementarity that comes across from a certain distance or scale turns into tension, rivalry and competition when you get closer. So if it's any good news to the Maltese and Gozidans out there, you're not alone. This is a common situation.
Yes.
And of course, how to resolve it, or perhaps better, how to acknowledge it and come to terms with it, is part of the questions.
Yeah.
Part of the question that's being addressed in this book. So there are different islands, as you said, different archipelagos. The way in which they go around trying to reconcile this rivalry, this competition, is the story of their lives. Remember, many of these islands depend considerably on their tourism industry. In Malta, we're pretty lucky because tourism only represents about 15% of our GDP. But other countries, say Bahamas, 80% of their economic revenue depends on tourism. So it's very, very important they get their act together, and the islanders of the main island are extremely keen to tap into this wealth.
In fact, your
because there are no other choices.
In the book is more than island tourism, branding, marketing and logistics in archipelago tourist destinations. So these are the strategies that these archipelagos have to use to face these various challenges that we've been talking about. Really.
Yes, exactly. The focus is on these three strategic considerations. One is branding, therefore the identification of an image, a logo, a soundbite that captures as best possible the experience that you are expecting to elicit in relation to a tourist visit, right? The brand. The marketing is then how do you disseminate that brand? What do you do to spread the word, tap into potential tourists for them to, first of all, as I said, know that you exist and then to appreciate what you offer and how different you are from others. And third, the logistics, because then, of course, if you exist, if you manage to convince somebody to come, then, of course, there has to be the technology and the infrastructure to permit that person to visit. And therefore, we talk about charter and scheduled airline flights, airports, domestic and international, ports for ferries, catamarans, etc., tunnels, causeways connecting different islands, etc. So all this, it's a full package.
Won't mention the Gozo Bridge.
Why not? Why not? Gozo Bridge is, again, it was in the paper again this week. It seemed to be a solution to a problem. I think it deserves further study. The Gozitans I don't think the Gozdens are interested in a link to Cherkewa. The Gozdens are interested in a link to Malta and where the action is. So there may be other possibilities down there that are worth considering. Even keeping in mind the likely developments in our terrain and our landscape with sea level rise. Sea level rise is something that's happening. Within 100, 150 years, a link to Cherkewa might be a link to the island of Cherkewa. And I don't think the Gozdens are interested in that. They're interested in something better. So again, you know, this is it's an open discussion and long may it last.
This, I was going to mention climate change and also the things, the unexpected things that can turn up, that can turn your investment bad, just bad weather, for example, or something like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And risk insurance, I think, is increasingly becoming important because the amount of risks and the intensity of those risks is increasing. We're actually having a symposium, an international symposium, at the Valletta campus in the first week of December, discussing the economic and labor market implications of global environmental change with Malta as a focus. And I'm very pleased that some colleagues from Canada and the United States are coming as well in order to share their expertise and their software to show us exactly what's going on.
Exactly. Certainly there's a need to look into the future as far as we can, at least to cover that risk element of what is a huge investment after all.
Absolutely. If you are an employer, if you are a businessman, or if you are a potential investor, you would want to think long term about what you're doing. Of course, people consider political stability, people consider the soundness of their investment, but I think they will need to factor in the likely impacts of climate change into their formula.
Well, we've run out of time. Thank you very, very much, Professor Godfrey Baldacchino, for coming to talk to us today on University Matters on Campus FM about archipelago tourism.
Thank you.
You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye. Il-programm li għadkom kemm smajtu kien miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.